Are you looking to modernize your veterinary practice by offering virtual care to pet owners? Fortunately, there's an easy solution from the podcast sponsor Medici. That's M-E-D-I-C-I. Medici is a telehealth solution built for veterinarians. I've made it easy to check out Medici with a link in the show notes, or you can head over to their website, medici.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. Medici lets you text, call, and video chat with clients with their easy-to-use app. Send or receive images and videos of pets, stay VCPR compliant, and get paid, which is always a wonderful thing, for delivering convenient care right from your phone.
Hi, this is Dr. Aaron Smiley, and I've offered telemedicine to my clients since I started. In 2017, I integrated paid telemedicine with Medici.
Ready to go virtual? Visit medici.md, that's M-E-D-I-C-I.md, or call 512-967-6454 to learn more. And with that, here's the show. You're listening to the Veterinary Success Podcast. I'm Isaiah Douglas. Today, Dan Routh is back. We are going to do the first radio show. If you listen to the initial intro episode, I talked about how this was coming. If you listen to Dan's interview, you got to know him a little bit better. But today we're going to start the first of the various radio shows. And really what the radio show is going to be answering questions or taking topics that are recent. So today we'll kick it off with a question that I was asked, which is information on buying a house with $250,000 in debt. And so with that, Dan, what's your thoughts on kind of home ownership, renting versus buying, that whole discussion?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a loaded one. It's probably the most common question that I hear all the time from my friends, family, coworkers, my wife. I mentioned on my interview, she's a recently graduated vet. So we just got out of vet school. We struggled for 4 years. We lived really cheaply, and we've seen all of our high school friends and college friends buying homes, having kids, and we feel like there's a race to buy a house. So this is a personal struggle for us at the moment, is trying to figure out when is the right time and what are we willing to sacrifice to reach that goal at the moment. Because the biggest thing with buying a home is having that down payment. But more uniquely to veterinarians is the student loan burden. And one of the biggest issues of buying a house is your debt to income ratio. You'll see it on articles. Your mortgage broker will talk about it. You know, really it's your ability to make payments on buying that future home. And so, you know, if you have student loans that are coming to you and that you're paying every month, and maybe you're not yet on an income-based repayment plan, and so those payments are pretty high, it's going to hurt your chances of being able to get approved for a mortgage or a mortgage at the value that you want. And so we've been thinking about this a lot. And one of the things is, you know, do we want to buy a starter home, you know, something cheap, maybe an older house that we have to fix up? You know, you're coming home from work every day just because we wanted to buy a house, but now I have to do renovations every night. I like doing renovations. I like to think I'm handy, but you know,
that's good because I'm like the anti Tim the Toolman Taylor. I'm super not handy.
So I like to think I am, but you know, it's not what I want to do every night. And so I err towards buying a home is going to be a lifestyle choice. It's not going to be an investment. So make sure you separate those two things. You'll hear that a lot. Parents will always love to say that houses are investments. They're usually not. think about your priorities. Do you want to save your money, continuing to live extremely cheaply to save for a down payment and pay down your student loans at the same time? Or would you rather be focusing on kind of one or the other? If you truly are set on buying that home, we are set on buying a home in a few years. So not right away. So our goals right now, my wife and I, is we are paying down student loan debt. Her debt is about 1.5 times her salary, but it's less than our combined income for a year. So we're opting to pay down her debt as quickly as possible rather than going for some kind of forgiveness. And so from there, we're trying to pay it down, and she's an intern for the next year. So she has a pretty low salary. And so through that process, we're getting her on an income-based repayment plan. And so that when we actually do go buy that house, her required payments are very low. which helps with that monthly debt to income ratio. And so that way we'll be able to get approved for a mortgage. And then when her income kicks up, when she actually goes out and gets a private practice job, we'll actually be able to take on that monthly payment a lot more easily.
Sound advice. The one thing that you touched on was the down payment. So traditionally everyone will talk about PMI, which is private mortgage insurance. If you don't have a 20% down payment, there are loans that are tailored and structured towards doctors. And so that encompasses veterinarians where they will give you 100% of that purchase price. A lot of times if you qualify, which recently it hasn't been that hard to qualify, I've seen them, which you don't necessarily want to take out 100% of the purchase price because then you have no equity in that home, which can be troubling down the road, but you can do it. So the question I think initially was, you know, having that debt load, how do you do it? And Dan, you touched on, it's a lifestyle choice. It's not an investment. Typically, if you have a 15-year mortgage, you're going to pay for the home twice. So if you have a $250,000 house, you're going to pay $500,000 for that house. Traditionally, rule of thumb, not always that way that it is. If you have a 30-year mortgage, you're going to pay for that house three times. So that's, when you think about that, that's a lot of money to be putting in to live somewhere and have a lifestyle choice. That leads to another topic about investments. And Dan, you talked about parents talking, oh, it's the best investment you can have. And I've heard friends talk about investments in homes. And I'm like, it's not an investment. It's a lifestyle choice. So there's a couple really good articles that I'll link to that talk about this. The first one was done by Ken Fisher. So for those that know, Ken Fisher hates annuities. He advertises all the time on TV, but he wrote a really good article talking about, I hear you, but your home is a lousy investment. And he talks about if you had the perfect timing on buying a home and selling it, you would have made 10.8%. That is, if you timed everything perfect, bought it in the right spot, you know, think about California, 60s, 70s, bought a perfect house, beachfront, got a good deal, you know, type of investment. And then he goes on to talk about, you know, Seattle, which has been a pretty hot market from, I think it was 2012 to 2016 annually with all costs included. So think about insurance, think about the mortgage payment, when your water heater blows up, like all those other extra costs that come into play, it really equated to about 2% annually was the return for that single family home. So not great. And then the topic is always there, like, well, I need a way to save. And it can be a forced savings mechanism. Basically, that mortgage payment will force you to save money. If you didn't have it, you were just going to spend it all. And yeah, if you're really undisciplined, maybe it makes sense and it can be a way to save.
Yeah, I tend to think that, you know, if you're going to be living in a home, I view that as a lifestyle asset. It's something that you have because it fits your lifestyle and it's something that you wanted. It's like buying a Toyota Camry instead of a, you know, classic Mustang. You know, you bought it because it makes sense for your lifestyle. You didn't buy it because you want to go flip it a few years later. If you're buying a rental home that you have renters in that are paying rent every month, giving you cash flow, the appreciation on that house, that is an investment because you have no underlying cost because renters are paying for it. But when you're the renter in your own house paying your own mortgage, it's just it's a lifestyle piece. Yeah, I mean, there are many ways to do it. A mortgage loan, I'm not a huge fan of them, as you mentioned, because the private mortgage insurance and that you can get one for no money down on a ginormous house, very expensive. Also, there, I don't know the exact rules on it, but the interest rates tend to be slightly higher on those because of the risk of no money down. So tread lightly on those would be my advice. We're specifically not going that route, even though we probably could if we wanted to. But, and the other option is just trying to make sure you have a really good plan on your student loan repayment, working with a professional there that's experienced to come up with a income-based repayment to get those payments as low as possible if you're going for forgiveness, so that you can get that debt to income ratio down.
And the last piece from a kind of factual base comes from Twitter. Someone that I think is a great follow, Charlie Biello is the name. And he put up some statistics of US home price growth by decade. So he went back to 1891 through 2018. Again, this is the average. And we all know averages can be skewed. But after inflation, the real annualized return over that huge amount of time was less than half of 1%.
Wow.
So again,
not a great return if you look at various different areas, depending on where you're at. So certainly here in the Midwest, not a great way to build income. Again, I talked about California. There might be certain areas. It's never a good investment. It is going to be very rare that you'll ever be able to buy a single family home, live in it, and it be a great investment. It's just because there's so many costs that you don't see, property taxes that you don't see, you know, that all the time. You don't see the new roof. You don't see the new windows. All those things are money that could have been put into something else, into an investment. But again, Dan, to your point, my wife and I, we own a home. We will own a home because it's a lifestyle choice. That's what we want. And it's important for us as our family grows to have something that's ours. And my wife's like, never again. We're not living in an apartment. And I get it. So it's not a damnation of someone that wants to own a home. You do make decisions a lot of times in life that maybe don't make the perfect sense on an Excel spreadsheet. And that's okay. But you can absolutely own a home with, you know, $250,000 worth of debt. You can find lenders. Just be intelligent about it. I think great point. Get your student loans in order. Make sure you understand that repayment plan. Have some money down, even if you don't have the 20%. Put something so you have a little equity in the home. But it absolutely is out there. So yeah, that's kind of the way that I would address it. Any other closing thoughts on that question?
No, I mean, I just put the numbers to it. That's the biggest thing, is actually put the numbers down on paper and a spreadsheet and bounce it off a professional or a trusted confidant that has experience in the area, and just really see if it works. And if it's something you really want to do, then go for it.
Yeah. And the last thing, and I think about other, so the average mortgage, I was told this from a mortgage broker, so I'll take him at his word. The average mortgage life typically is 5 to 6 years, which is not very much. Mm-mm. And a lot of time, those first few years, a lot of it is just paying back the interest. You're not actually getting into principal. So it's even another poor decision. So if you're not going to be somewhere very long, again, don't buy that house, put that down payment, and then just be paying on interest initially. You know, maybe just wait until you know that you're going to be settled for a little bit longer. That's the last piece there. Dan, you had a great idea and topic that you saw on Twitter. You want to share that and then we'll discuss it?
Yeah. So deep in the financial Twitter world that Isaiah and I seem to find ourselves on a daily basis, I found a tweet today from Meb Faber. Meb is a chief investment, I think, officer with Cambria Investments. Yeah, so I saw on Twitter, Meb had posted a link to a Variety article that Jay-Z is officially a billionaire. So congrats, Jay-Z, another celebrity making a ton of money and doing well for himself. But the point of the tweet wasn't just to point out another celebrity with a lot of money. It was how Jay-Z acquired such wealth. And that's really the impressive part of it. You know, people point out that Jay-Z, you know, he's been in the rap, top of the rap hip hop game since the mid to late 90s. He's produced a bunch of young artists over the years, but his wealth came from owning the money. He was a very successful artist. He made a ton of money, but his money from music really only generated about 75, 80 million. I say only. It's an incredible amount of money.
It's a drop in the bucket, you know, no big deal.
But on $1 billion, it's really a small piece.
Super small.
You know, it's about 7.5% of that total amount. And so when you actually break it down, they do this in the article. It was interesting. People generate wealth from owning companies, building brands that people love, owning stocks, bonds, and other investments. And so the point of it was to point out that he made real money from being good at his profession. So, you know, when it's a vet, it's a dentist, you know, you're going to be a really good doctor. You're going to get paid for those services, but there's a finite amount of money that's to be made as a staff veterinarian, as a financial advisor that works for a company. You know, you can be a plumber or you can go start a plumbing business. And really, it's the owners of companies that are ones that are given the opportunity to generate wealth, to pay down debt, to have that financial freedom. And so looking at it, he made a bunch of money. He has a liquor business. He has Tidal, the streaming music streaming business. Each of those made $100 million each. Rock Nation, his sports agency, made $75 million. He has art collections worth about $70 million. Real estate, half $50 million. He has a champagne business worth about $300 million. All of these are from buying in and becoming an owner, becoming a brand manager for a company. And so it's just, don't be afraid to actually go out and try and buy into something. He saw the opportunity. He realized there was a much bigger market actually being the owner than it is just being the artist, the hip hop manager. Interesting time for today, but congrats to Jay-Z becoming a billionaire.
That's impressive. Not Jay-Z specifically, but even like Dr. Yeah. Dre with Beats. I mean, they sold to Apple for $3 billion. And I know that he didn't own all of that, but the same type of thing, like has just developed other businesses around kind of what they cut their teeth and their main focus initially was here, but they just educated themselves and hopefully surrounded themselves with smart people to make other really wise decisions. And I'm sure there's plenty of deals that Jay-Z and Dre and other folks did that were yep. awful. Like they just lost a ton of money and those don't get put up there. And it's easy when you have that base of $75 or $80 yep. million dollars to start with. To do that. But even as a financial advisor, as a veterinarian, it's like you can work for someone else and you can save, you can retire, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you have a desire, the gumption to do your own thing or see a better way to do it, there are those that go out on their own and fail. You can always come back. There typically is going to be someone that will hire you again. In both of those industries, there's a lot of need for quality, good, sound, young professionals that are doing things the right way. But starting your own business gives you the flexibility to implement a standard of care and something that you believe in. You don't have to defend, you know, a larger organization for doing something or pushing a treatment plan or pushing products or whatever it may be. And then you can create and grow that business and hire other great, smart, intelligent people and have some wealth creation outside of just what that first business is. And I mean, it sounds crazy, but you can lose your job and that's one decision by one person. If you start your business and you have clients, if you have patients, if you have all these, let's say you have hundreds of them. Well, if one fires you, you're still in business. You don't have that same risk. And yeah, the risk initially, you're probably going to take a step back financially. You're not going to make as much right away. It takes time. The long game is very, very powerful. And if you are competent and know what you're doing, from that standpoint, you don't have to be the best of the best. There are a lot of people out there that have run successful businesses yeah. that if you sit down and talk with them, they're just normal people too. There's nothing that they've figured out. You can read as many books as you want and you're still always going to have to do it. And you're going to learn, you're going to fall on your face. You're going to decide, wow, I should have done it this way. And that's okay. At the end of the day, if you treat people right and do things the right way, you'll be surprised at how successful you can be because sometimes the small stuff just gets ignored and people feel like they're just another client, another patient and don't have that personal connection. And when you can bring that to someone, especially in a day and age where we are really striving for genuine relationships,
yeah,
it can be pretty powerful. So yeah, I think it's a great analogy to someone that even wants to start a hospital or a clinic and you don't have to do it alone. You can find partners. You don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really important part of it is you don't have to go start your own from scratch. You know, if you're a mid-career young veterinarian, you know, or any profession, and you have the opportunity to potentially buy in to become a minority partner in a business, you know, maybe it's a group of vets, there's maybe five in your practice and you're going to be, you know, number five lowest on the totem pole. It's a tiny piece, but even that is a great way to get started. You know, I know, speaking from our situation, you know, granted we're brand new and all that in the vet world, but at the moment, my wife, she doesn't want to own her own practice. She sees it as something that she wouldn't want to do. She doesn't want to have to deal with all of the business owner duties and, you know, buying and selling supplies, you know, equipment, all of that. So maybe she's somebody that wants to become a minority owner. You know, she takes on a lot of the patient care, a lot of the training with the staff, you know, some of those duties. And maybe she leaves the larger business decisions to majority owners or some of the other people. So just don't be afraid to take on that opportunity. Obviously, when you are pitched or when you're presented an opportunity like buying into a business, give thorough due diligence, read through everything you can, maybe hire an attorney or a CPA to look at the deals with you I think it's really important to make sure that you have your own representation, including. So that being said, congrats to Jay-Z becoming a billionaire.
Yeah, that's great advice. And absolutely have someone review the deals that is vet specific, that understands the numbers and metrics they need to look for, and not just someone that is kind of a generalist. I think with how specialized vet med is today, you really want to make sure that you understand what you're buying and what you're getting into and what the valuation is. Because as much as you might love that specific person that you're going to go into business with, you want to make sure that you're getting a fair deal all the way around. Good job, Jay-Z. We tied in Jay-Z with vet med. I think that's a good day.
I think we
succeeded. Yeah. So with that, any closing parting words?
Go out and buy that house if it's something you really want to do. Just as always, look at the numbers and take your time. There's no rush. Everybody's living their own story. So take your time.
Yep. Don't worry about comparing yourself to others. Do things that make sense for you and you'll be okay. So thanks so much. We'll be back with another radio show soon. If you have questions, have things you want to address, again, you can connect with either of us via Twitter. Send me an email, send Dan an email. Our information will be in the show notes. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. All comments made on today's show should not be taken as investment, tax, or legal advice. All comments are for educational purposes only. You should talk to your professional team before implementing anything. Isaiah Douglas is the founder of ID Financial Planning and Wealth Management. Isaiah is a registered investment advisor in the state of Indiana. Dan Routh is employed by Old Peak Finance and is a registered investment advisor in the state of North Carolina. The biggest compliment you can give is to share this podcast with a friend. Reviews help the show get found, and Apple Podcasts is predominantly the platform that is how people listen to the show. If you have 3 minutes, love the show, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us an honest rating and review. That will help more people find the show. For all of today's links and information, head over to veterinarysuccesspodcast.com. There you can also subscribe via your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss another episode. Finally, if you'd like more information and insights and have the ability for your voice to be heard, join the private Facebook group. You can search for the Veterinary Success Podcast on Facebook or head over to veterinarysuccesspodcast.com. Scroll to the bottom section where it says about your host and click on the Facebook icon. Then I can let you join the group and would love to hear from you there. Thanks for listening, and I'll be talking again to you soon.